Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
In the beginning of the 60s, I was always a big fan of rock and roll, but also of soul music. I start as a rock and roll singer, and then I found the soul music, then changed to a music producer. This everything is a wonderful mix to start your own music career.
We were 22, 23, very naive Germans, French people, who never been in the United States, who hardly didn't speak English, who got this offer, you know. And I don't know if I would do it the same way, but probably maybe I would.
We got the money, we signed the contract, no protection, naive, trusting the big guy with all the gold records on the wall. And that's it. That's all she wrote.
This is my real voice, Milli Vanilli, part one. Let's go. Welcome to Fraudsters. I'm Sina Gazzavi. We bring you the scams you love from the fraudsters we hate. My co-hosts Ariel Lieti and Justin Williams are here. Hey guys, how's it going?
It's going, Sina. I'll tell you what. How are you? How are you doing today?
Do you hear the baby? There's a baby in the infant that is potentially hungry in the background. But wow. No, the pod has to come first.
What would you do if your son was at home crying all alone on the bedroom floor because he's hungry? And the only way to feed. I don't know if you even understand that reference. This is from my youth.
Is it? It wasn't me.
No. Sorry. This was City High, Claudette Ortiz.
Oh,
look
no,
it up.
I don't know this.
Yeah.
I don't know
this. It's a classic. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
It wasn't me. What if your baby was laying on the bathroom floor? It had no food there.
I love that all of your accents are the same, Justin.
Yeah. They're all just Arnold's, Jamaican Arnold Schwarzenegger is always my...
That's close.
Yeah.
You guys, do you really think you know the story of Milli Vanilli? You think watching Behind the Music 25 years ago makes you an expert on Milli Vanilli? Well, strap in, because today we're uncovering the truth surrounding this lip sync fairy tale. We follow the story of Rob and Fab. One grew up in an orphanage in Germany, the other in his wealthy parents' house in Paris, much like where Justin is right now. We tell the story of one man who put it all together and the other groups he Frankensteined together. We tell the story of teen telemarketers whose song produced by a gas station attendant was stolen and turned into the number one song in the world. We tell the real story behind the time the track started skipping while they were performing live. And we detail the many, many, many artists that make up Milli Vanilli. And it's possible you know that one of the faces of Milli Vanilli is dead, but I bet you don't know which one. I barely do. It's the one with the dreads. And they both have dreads. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the one that was in that scandal.
Yeah, exactly. That. The story of Milli Vanilli starts, as many good stories do, in Nazi Germany during the first year of World War II. That year, Franz Reuther was born, but that name was way too Nazi sounding. So he changed it to Frank Farian, which, I don't know. He's not fooling anyone. This musical journey started with a band he created in the 60s called Frankie Farian and Die Schatten, German for the shadows. Again, not fooling anyone.
I heard Elvis died Schatten.
Oh, no, Justin. Boo. Tomato, tomato, tomato. They self-produced an album and sold it at gigs around Germany. It was a cover band that played soul songs, but that's the type of music Frank was drawn to, other people's. So that band enjoyed little success, as well they should, considering they were a cover band. But Farian's star quality was obvious, and he quickly signed a recording contract as a solo artist. It didn't take long before he was pumping out covers of songs like Yakety Yak, Under the Boardwalk, and Otis Redding's Mr. Pitiful. He had some originals too, like the German hit Dana My Love. And the song Rocky, which was number one on the German charts. Then in the mid-70s, he transitioned to disco. The best, the brightest. We love it. I'm a big disco fan. Justin, do you like disco?
I'm actually a huge disco fan. I always liked his version of Yakety Yak. It's like, Yakety Yak! I'm going to go screw and shine out the Yakety Yak!
So he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. We got it. Great. We got it.
I apologize to all of our German listeners.
Yeah, our German listeners are leaving the chat. So Farian now changed his name, and he's now calling himself Boney M. He named himself after an Australian TV show about Napoleon Bonaparte called Boney. He added the M because he thought it sounded nice and simple. If he wanted simple, he could have just gone with BM, but whatever. And Farian would get the bowels moving with his first hit, a disco song called Baby, Do You Want a Bump, which was a repurposing of Prince Buster's Al Capone. But to me, it really just sounds like music to do cocaine to, honestly. So here's the original.
Classic disco.
Classic disco. We're up all night. We're doing drugs.
Yeah. Oh. That's nice.
Yeah, this song's hard.
Yeah, this. I was gonna say this sounds like African music.
I like this one. Oh, I love it. I'm adding this to the playlist. I have a playlist.
Precursor to like Fela Kuti.
Yes. Yes. That's what I was thinking. Okay. So adding that to my playlist because it's a fun song. Okay. So now I'm going to listen to Boney M's Do You Want a Bump?
Welcome to American Bandstand. Now we've got Do You Want a Bump by Boney M.
Do you want a bump?
I also like this. Can't stop me. Oh, yeah, well. Yeah, it's pretty similar. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar. All the kids are doing it now. All the kids are sampling other songs. How can I be mad at Boney M?
Yeah, he did just take this dude's record.
Yeah.
I mean, he took the... Man.
It's more than just like the couple verse sample, and like he didn't like remix. He kind of just took the whole thing.
Yeah,
there's an element of power relations too. If you're stealing from like a early post colonial African artist, that might not probably have the legal protections that a guy coming along in the 70s in Germany probably has.
What historical references could you possibly be referring to, Justin?
Yeah. You know, this guy probably saw this on TV or whatever. You know, the original artist is like, this is bullshit.
Years and years later.
Yeah.
The song got traction in the Netherlands, so Farian quickly put together a group to perform the song in the country. He picked two women who could sing and another man and woman who were more just to fill out the look of the group. The man in the group was Bobby Farrell, and despite the fact that he couldn't sing, he was now the lead.
He can't sing at all. All he can do is coke moves.
But is he cute, though? Then, yes, put him in the front.
But he's like not cute. It's also like he's disco cute. Like he's.
But that's what we want. That's what the girls want. Disco cute.
He looks good shirtless.
And again, that's what the girlies want. And the girls and the gays ask for this. So he's giving. He's delivering.
It's funny because Liz Mitchell's in this group too. She did real vocals. She's the one who's doing a lot of real vocals in this thing too. Bobby is definitely like he's like Sly Stone without the talent.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
No, he's literally just.
Yeah. Yeah. He's almost like Flavor Flav, but with even less contribution to vocals.
Yeah, I think that's more accurate.
But he's hot and shirtless, so
fun to do cocaine in a bathroom with. I'm sure. Yeah.
I mean, the dance moves are impeccable though. I like the way he did.
It's good. Yeah. So Bobby would only pretend to sing while the track featuring Farian's vocals would play in the speakers. And not to be outshone by even the women that did sing on the albums, he gave them no credit for singing at all on the albums. Farian was quickly learning that he didn't have to share the credit as long as he was in charge. And the fact that the band was just a face for Farian, the solo artist, was an open secret, as it was one his ego didn't want hidden. And this type of ruse was fairly common among disco groups.
And it's also something that's going to go forward of like taking a woman's voice. Because remember, CNC Music Factory did this. Remember, it was like a heftier gospel woman that sang that everybody dance now. Yeah. But they put like some skinny like model in the video.
Yeah.
And just like never gave her credit.
Damn. We were out here being fucked up for a long, long time. And he was just taking advantage of it. Ugh. So make no mistake, Boney M was a massive success. Between 1975 and 88, they had 38 top 10 hits in Germany, with 15 singles reaching number one. Ah, God. I'll save you the names of the songs you have definitely not heard. So three of these songs are among the top selling singles of all time in the UK, which feature a female lead singer. A hit that still lingers in the TikTok algorithm was Rasputin, a sexy song about the sexy Russian czar who is also a great lover.
This is my favorite. I blasted this song. This song so much. This is fucking incredible, rocks.
Dudes rock.
Play this. This song is everything to me.
I love this song.
Well, I also just like it too. It's like a tribute to probably one of the top five craziest people that's ever walked the planet Earth.
But that tracks for Boney M.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't do like a Genghis Khan track, but like...
Yeah.
I mean, the video fucking slaps. Come on. I would wear that today.
This feels like a Bushwick art party that I was at in 2011.
Yep.
You could still buy drugs from a stranger at the club then. You can do that.
Before the fentanyl hit the streets.
Oh, true.
Ariel, come on. What are you doing? I hope you're bringing testing strips wherever you go.
Drugs.
Testing strips.
Not doing no loose nothing.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Give me a
Lucy. Ecstasy. Yeah.
Hand me a Lucy ecstasy. How much will that be?
I need to see the reviews on your Amazon account.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. What's the Yelp on this guy? Okay. That song, it's amazing. It's like, they remixed it, and that's how it ended up on, like, some DJs remixed it, and that's how it ended up on TikTok. But then you learn about the original, and you're like, oh my God, these people get nothing.
I mean, when we decided to do Milli Vanilli, I was pleasantly surprised that we also had, like, a Boney M, it's worlds collide. Yeah. This is so great for me. Yeah. All the things that I love very much.
But this is like this weird thing of like this is like the proto black Europe.
Mm.
So I think it was just like if you were one of the four like black dudes in Europe during this period, you had to like, you had to have like a hit record.
Or else they would kick you out.
Or, you know what I mean? It's like, of course there's a tie-in. It's like, how many, like, there weren't that many black people in Europe at this point.
It's true. All three of them were in Boney M.
Yeah. And they're either linked to, it's like either like early wave immigrants or like side babies of, you know, some guy that was stationed out in Hamburg.
Hamburger. That's for me. The band sputtered out in the 80s. He left at one point due to a contract dispute. And he was replaced, but then later came back. Boney M. officially called it quits in 1986, and singer Liz Mitchell said that the band received less than 10% of the profits of their music, the rest going to the label and to Farian. I mean, no harm, no foul, right?
Yeah.
This is like a classic music industry problem where they give the advance, and then you have to pay the advance back based on album sales, and they take expenses out for like studio time, tours, and stuff like that. Inherently, the music industry, which is why when Napster and all those things popped up, they just collapsed because there was just the whole industry was scam. It was just built on scamming artists.
Yeah. Even now, they try to find a way. There's ways. Now it's just TikTok music.
Yeah, now the labels are hiring like click farms to like spin Spotify records so that they juice the numbers, which, guys, I've been trying to find for our show. I can't do it.
Yeah. Mm.
That's not me coughing. That's an infant.
Please click on this show, you know, on Spotify to the listeners. And if you're ever on Apple Music or iTunes, check out Justin Williams' America's Little Cutie Baby. If you want to click on that, like, 1 million times, that would be really nice.
I might just let it play over and over again. Here's Frank Farian reflecting on his career.
In the beginning of the 60s, I was always a big fan of rock and roll, but also of soul music. I start as a rock and roll singer, and then I found the soul music, then changed to a music producer. This everything is a wonderful mix to start your own music career. Boney M is magic. Daddy Cool stays for Boney M and it changed my whole life. Liz, Marcia, Bobby, we were a unit, a special unit, and we came together just like that. So, and it changed my life. It was all the time a wonderful work. People coming after so many, many years. Our music is evergreen.
So, you know what's interesting there? Bit of a red flag when you say something changed your life and you have no specific details of anything that happened. Just said we came together and then it changed my life.
I think that the major red flag for me was that he sounded like when you do a German accent, Cena. He sounded like, I'm sure people are going to be listening to this and being confused. Like, is Cena being funny right now?
You know, when I got together with Boney M.
Yeah.
We were like a magic show. Like my cousin Siegfried Roy, God bless them both. We came and we made a disco magic. A magic sandwich, and I was in the middle.
Disco magic sandwich, yes. That's the name of our next album.
That really is true. Wow.
I know.
Thank God. I feel so seen.
I'm scared. So clearly, with Boney M., Farian had everything figured out. I mean, a band is what you say it is. You record the best voices. You use the best musicians. And performing was left up to those who are best at that, too. They don't all need to be the same person. When your band relies on one person to do it all, you rarely have any staying power. One drug overdose or plane crash, and the brand you built is all over. But Boney M. actually still plays today in various forms. I love Sunny. It's one of my favorite songs. And the rights to the name have been passed around, and there's no telling you who would actually be at the concert, but we still want to go. We're still looking for Boney M tickets. If anyone has any information on the whereabouts of the current iteration of Boney M, please let us know.
it's like when a lot of my favorite soul groups, they split up or had legal disputes. So it'd be like, watch The Temptations featuring like the one surviving man. And then it's like, then there's the New Temptations with this like three 20-year-olds that are children of the guys. And it's like, then they have a legal dispute and it's like the new, real original Temptations.
We promise.
Yeah. It's just like four different Temptations groups touring the country at any one point.
Oh my God. Well, not only that, if the performers are marginalized, then there's less confusion about who's in control and who gets the money. Boney M was Cirque du Soleil, a traveling circus of whatever performers would do the job for a set paycheck, no matter how dangerous the environment.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Save big money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Around the time of the implosion of Boney M, another musical union was forming. Rob Pilatus and Fab Moravan were fast becoming friends in Munich, Germany. When they met at a Munich dance school in 1984, Fab was initially put off by Rob, nicknaming him Star and teasing him by confronting him one day and asking, "Hey, Star, how's it going?" These were maybe not the most clever men, but they certainly had interesting backgrounds.
Hey, Star.
Hey, how's it going, Star? Like, that's an insult. Thank you. You think I'm a star?
You think you're going to be someone? You think you're going to make it out of poverty, huh, Star? Oh, you have three? Oh, how cute.
I just want to fact check really quick. This should all be done in a French accent, not a German.
Wow.
Okay, keep all that in. Oh, do you think this is very funny? Do you think you are a star?
You think it is star?
But you grew up a little bit pauvre, the two pauls.
This is not going to be a rags to riches story. You star in the gutter, in the trash.
You know, it's constellation you will be. You'll be the Big Dipper because you will dip into nothingness as you die.
I guess that's French.
I got to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. And you're wearing a striped shirt, so it's... You're basically French. We just got to get you a beret. Mm-hmm. So Rob Pilatus was born in New York City in 1965 to a white German stripper and an American serviceman. Children, there's nothing funny about that. These are just, what would you do if your son was at home crying all alone? It just always comes back to City High.
Hey, support our troops.
I was going to say, that was Tinder for the 60s.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, children born to sex workers, knocked up by sailors on shore leave, rarely end up with a good childhood, and Rob's was terrible. Upon his birth, he was taken back to Bavaria, Germany as an infant and spent his first 4 years in an orphanage before being adopted by a white German family. There are conflicting reports about whether he was actually born in New York or Germany, and it would make more sense if it was Germany, but we cannot say for sure.
That's like a sad thing. That tells you how few black people there are in Europe. It's like if you have like a mixed race baby, you have to just like give it up for adoption. And this is like what is this, like late 60s?
Well, yeah. But was it that, or was it that just like the American serviceman left and then the stripper mom couldn't afford this lifestyle?
I think it's probably both. It's like, what are you going to do? Like, you know, it's like your extended family's not on board with this.
It was a question that we asked, and we couldn't find an answer, because I did want to know. I mean, you know, like what? How did he get adopted? What was the turning point? But you know, it's tough to find that stuff out.
Fab actually had the opposite start in life. He was born in Paris in 1966 to a pharmacist mother and an international architect father. Mm-hmm. So Rob certainly had it tougher than Fab. Rob remembers being surrounded by white kids and being called Kunta Kinte in school.
Oh, Jesus.
Bullies dropped him in trash cans and students would pay him to touch his hair.
Hey, at least I can getting relate. Paid. I got thrown in trash cans.
Oh, I thought someone was paying you to touch your hair. People were just doing that for free.
They were just touching my hair. No, it was. I actually didn't. I didn't really know how bad the hair touching thing was until I was much older.
Yeah, not great. Same. This treatment led to intense loneliness that was only lifted when Michael Jackson became popular in Germany. Finally, Rob thought, a cool black guy. Rob ran away.
How'd that work out for you?
He eventually was no longer a cool black guy, but a cool white woman. And Rob ran away.
a ghoul.
Of a ghoul. Not even a woman, I wouldn't say. So Rob ran away from home at 14, intent on chiseling out a place for himself in show business. He was actually a pretty good soccer player and was possibly scouted by the German team FC Bayern. It was actually while playing pickup soccer that he made connections with some Afarian session musicians. He also joined a breakdancing crew called the Bionic Dance Crew and even performed in New York at the Swatch Watch World Breakdance Championship. Wow. So despite the fact that Rich Boy Fab had gotten a better start in life, he too had his struggles when he moved to Germany at 18 to teach at the dance school. So upon arriving in Munich, he realized he had lost his suitcase and money and was forced to spend days sleeping in the train station. He don't know struggle. That's his first brush with struggle.
Yeah.
But they eventually realized that alone they were just hot black guys in Germany. But together, they were a spectacle. They moved in together and began dancing at a club called P1. Rob will get a taste of the spotlight first when he pretended to play guitar for the group Wind during the 1987 Eurovision Song Contest. They took second place. And after Rob's success as a fake musician, he and Fab turned their attention to music, or at least like looking good near where music was playing. Their first stop on the road to musical infamy was the Salon. After watching a Christmas special about the pop icons, they realized that one thing that Marilyn Monroe, Bob Marley, and Elvis had in common was instantly recognizable hair. And since they didn't have the time to let dreadlocks grow naturally, they decided to get matching hair extensions. So a lot of musicians start out with guitar lessons. Rob and Fab were taking the HOV lane to fame.
Guys, I wanted to bring this up. I think the show is missing something.
Should I change my hair?
I think we all should get the same hair.
Oh.
Let's all get extensions for our San Diego show. Tickets are on sale now if you want to see us at the Balboa Theater in San Diego, California. Mm-hmm. We'll be there on October 20th. We will wear matching hair extensions on stage. We'll get extensions and then fly out together. We'll get the same hair if you send us messages on Instagram.
There we go.
Should we all get dreads? No, you know what we should do? We should all get like Tyler Perry wigs.
Ooh. Yeah.
Like those bad wigs that go like cornrows that go down to kind of the middle of your forehead and it just all looks wrong. That's what I want.
I want like a Cat Williams perm.
That could be arranged.
Very luxurious. Yes. Yeah.
And then sweat it out on stage.
Yeah. It's good to be here in San Diego. A lot of players in the audience. I'm here to say.
Stupid. So here's a clip from an interview with Fab on Music Express, a Dutch YouTube show from 2018 on how he met Rob.
Rob and I met in Munich, Germany. Just, you know, frequenting the same places, same clubs, dating the same girls.
Wait, what?
And then after a while, you know, you think, well, if you can't beat him, join him. And then by joining forces, we became stronger, and music is what we wanted to do. We had the same dreams when it came to music and our career and our lives and aspiration and how we wanted to live our lives. And we love sport. So it was playing soccer in the afternoon and music whole day. He played guitar, I sang. We sang together, we did harmonies. He used to play guitar because he used to sing. His sister used to be an Elvis impersonator. So he knew a lot of Elvis songs.
So many parts of that are creepy.
Yeah, I also feel like he's lying.
We would write music together.
All of it.
We'd jam out.
You famously got caught for not being singers or musicians. I don't think you were doing any of the stuff that you said you were doing. What?
Yeah. And those dreadlocks totally come off.
Yeah. The dreadlocks hat combo is crazy.
Yeah. No, I just, you know, it's like, to me, it's like the way, like my angle on this is like when you're like the two kind of like hip biracial guys in like this period in Europe, like when they say dating the same girls and stuff, like, it's like, there's kind of like a dark undertone of kind of fetishism to this in Europe, where it's like, you just find the two biracial guys in the club and they get to be just like pop stars. Right.
Yeah.
They get to be sex symbols pop. They were good looking in their like defense.
Yeah, they were cute. No, they were cute.
Yeah, they were good looking guys. But it is like kind of a like Europe's like, we're into all this American stuff, but we don't have access to the populations that are producing it. So we'll kind of like, you know.
He's somehow exuding fuckboy vibes as a 60-year-old man.
Is it the denim on denim?
It's the denim on denim. Yeah. It's the hat dreads combo. It's the shades indoors. It's just all very dastardly.
But he is like a proto hipster. That's also like what, it's like he's a club kid.
Yeah.
It's like this guy comes from like the clubs of like Berlin.
Yeah. At the clubs, Rob and Fab met a secretary at a studio who told her producer boss about two dancers who wanted to sing. A meeting was set and the producer, Werner Schuller, instantly recognize where their talents lied and signed them. Here's what Werner Schuller had to say about them. Quote, there are dancers and singers. Both Rob and Fab wanted to do both, which made things a little more difficult. I have to say they danced wonderfully. I realized singing wasn't really their strength, but it was doable. They named their group Empire Bazaar and set out to make some music. So they released their first single called Dance, which technically I'm sure featured some of their vocals somewhere. However, throughout the production, Rob and Fab's voices were supplemented with backup singers. Okay, so that's the story of how our three main characters in this fraud got their start. And nothing left to do but for them to meet and make musical history and fraudster infamy. But how exactly did it all come together? Through one original sin.
Bum, bum, bum.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream, Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies, to make four decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection Ice Cream. Extraordinary dairy.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
After the flameout of Boney M., Frank Farian was suffering from burnout and started hanging out in nightclubs around Frankfurt, especially the Funkadelic, which was an expat basement club filled with American military. Of the club, Farian said, quote, "You entered that basement and you felt like you were in America, in a basement somewhere in New York."
There's like, because there's just like piss everywhere.
There's two black guys. I'm basically in New York. Well, it's New York, it's baby.
Like, Harlem.
Harlem, stand up. While partying one night, the DJ tells about a new great record from America by a group named New Marks. A song called Girl, You Know It's True. Ooh. Farian loved the song, but thought the production was lacking. So he took the song and basically used it as a demo and built it out with added vocals and synthesizers. Here is the original. I'm in love, girl.
Yeah, that's crazy to take that record, because that's like taking the whole record.
Yeah, again. He took it.
It's not that much like
different. No, it's not. He then employed some American studio singers in Germany to redo the vocals. A lot of them, actually. One of the singers that would become one of the leads was Brad Howell, an American who toured the world with a number of bands. He liked Germany so much that after visiting the country with Wilson Pickett, he just stayed. And the other lead vocalist was John Davis. He had come to Germany in the army and also decided to stay. So both Brad Howell and John Davis would be brought back to record again and again. In some ways, Brad and John are really Milli Vanilli. Oh, and there's one more real Milli Vanilli member. For the rapping parts, he brought in another army expat, Charles Shaw. No relation to the Three Buck Chuck superhero, Charles Shaw. This Charles Shaw was just an 18-year-old rapper at the time, and he recorded the first tracks for Farian. So Shaw would later say he earned $12,000 for this session. But that wasn't it. Twins Linda and Jody Rocco had been successful backup singers in Europe, and they were tasked with adding the vocals to this track, which took them a total of 20 minutes. So Farian had everything in place except for the rights to the song. And maybe he could have gotten away with it if it hadn't turned into such a mega hit, but it did. And New Marks, the hip-hop group from Baltimore that wrote the song, found out. The members had met at a call center selling timeshares, and they also probably would have gotten away with it even then if one of the members hadn't been future industry titan Kevin Cagey Lyles, who went on to become the president of Def Jam, among his other accolades.
One of the most powerful people in the music industry.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't get a call from him about a timeshare. Lord knows I probably still have it by now.
Yeah, you definitely would, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, they should be glad that it's like somebody who had succeeded enough in business. Like, I would never want to rip off a Baltimore rapper song.
Yeah.
Like their biggest hit and then make a bunch of money off of it. That I felt like that would have been a lot different.
Not now. No.
This wouldn't be fraudsters. It would be like that time Germany got shot up in the 80s.
So, Girl You Know It's True had become a modest hit around the DMV and Philly, but modest only means about 8,000 copies were sold. So Lyles had said the song was written when he was 15 or 16 and was itself a take on an LL Cool J song, I Need Love.
Mm. When I look at my room, I think the part on the wall. I see my curtain call.
We could just sing it to you.
I see the dog, and I went out to myself. I know by the dog that she was.
And in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. For the first time in my life, I see I need love.
Shortly after its release, Newmark's label informed the group that a German company called Cool Tempo Records had picked up the song and that other labels were trying to put it out. 6 months after the song's release in the States, the group found out that Farian had stolen their song. Just fully stolen, because we did listen to it and it's pretty much the same. The producer of Newmark's version, Bill Petaway, remembers still working at a gas station a year after the song's release and hearing Farian's version on the radio, thinking, they had the same idea I had. And then realizing, wait, that sounds pretty close to everything I did. An 18-year-old Kevin Lyles.
What a bad day.
Right.
What a really bad day.
Thinking like, wow, I had a good idea. And then, wait a minute, someone stole my shit.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So an 18-year-old Kevin Lyles then went about suing the people who had stolen their song. So by 1989, they had won their legal battle and started receiving their windfall of royalties.
Before you get to the clip, this is like a great note. The same thing with like Boney M and Liz Mitchell. Like they like didn't get any of the money. Like you need a lawyer.
Yeah.
A lawyer is the only reason that Kevin Lyles is getting all this money. It's the only reason any of this stuff is ever happening. Lawyers, this country was built on lawyers and built so that only lawyers know how to run the country. And you just need one to like, or else you're just going to get hosed on stuff like this. You
so
need,
true.
You just need it. You need it.
You just need them. When the first Milli Vanilli album was released in Europe, similar to Boney M, it was just a name because Robin Fab hadn't been brought in yet. So Milli was the nickname of Farian's girlfriend, Ingrid. And then he added Vanilli because it sounded good, I guess. It was cute, Milli Vanilli. So once the album hit the charts in the UK, Farian decided he needed a way to promote it better and need some cool faces for the project. This album was a hit and it needed a way to turn this project into a lasting group. So a month after its release in Germany, it had sold 1 million copies, which is so much more in Germany than it is in America.
No, I mean, for context, though, if you sell 1 million copies anywhere, that's a big deal then. But yeah, like when you do, you know, segments of population, that means like this is a huge record in Germany. Yeah.
So of the various accounts of how Farian came to meet Robin Fab, the true story is probably that Robin Fab came to him asking for some work sometime in 1988. It was Ingrid who suggested they would be good as a front for Milli Vanilli as the singers of Girl You Know It's True. A deal was made and the duo were given an advance of $4,000. Since they were broke at the time, the money went out as quickly as it had once come in. But later, when they found out they weren't going to sing, they wanted out. And Farian is a reasonable man. So he said, as long as they paid back the advance, they can get out of their contract. Ugh. Alas, the money was already gone, and so were their chances to back out of this fast-moving project.
This is how... This is where we get to the vulnerable people here are actually Robin Fab.
Yeah.
That got taken advantage of by Farian. And this whole time, for decades... We thought Rob and Fab were just two greedy guys that got a bunch of money and got rich off this song. But really, they were just broke guys that were in a vulnerable position that got taken advantage of, which is so weird. I mean, you got to have a little bit of greed inside of you to like go down this road in the first place to even be a front man. And like, I don't know, maybe find a better girlfriend.
He wanted to be a star.
Wanted to be a star.
You sleeping in the Rob train station. Fab,
you're going to be amazing. I'm going to make you a superstar.
It's tough times. It's like you have to just room with the other biracial guy. And
the only other.
The girlfriend can't tell. Never mind.
You have to share a girlfriend. It's tough times.
They're rationing girlfriends now? What's going on?
Yeah.
Well, here is a clip of Fab talking about working with Farian.
I'm not sure if many people know this, but Girl You Know It's True is actually a cover from the group Newmarks. Did you know this version yourself before?
Yeah, I knew Newmark was a cover. I found that out a lot later. At first I didn't know it because I didn't know exactly what was going on in the studio with Frank Farian because they have that like on lockdown. You know, we came in afterwards not knowing that everything was, that part was already moving on its own with staff and producers and people recording. And as a matter of fact, some of the people that recorded their vocals to the Girl Know It's True were recording by themselves. And then another guy would come in and say, but I know that voice. And, you know, Frank would be like, no, don't worry about it. But they thought that it was going to be a project that they would be part of in the future. But it didn't turn out to be that, you know.
So they were tricked as well?
Oh, yeah, everybody was tricked. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've told the story.
So how did it work? Frank finished a song and then he showed it to you guys?
No. First we heard an instrumental and we thought we were going to be part of that. But it was not the case, and because we received advance money, very little amount of money, when the time came for us to want to record those songs, and they said no, and we said no then, and then they said, well, give us the money back, and we said, oh, we can't pay you back. Okay, so what do we do? Well, we work, we pay you back, and then we get out. But we didn't know that we signed a contract for 3 albums, because when we signed the contract, there was no attorney, there was no manager, there was nobody that was there to protect us. So if we had a management and attorney, they would have said, no. Okay, let them sing. First, give them a chance, because he never give us a chance. Give them the chance, and if they don't, then they'll pay you back the money, and then they get out. But it was not like that. We got the money, we signed the contract, no protection, naive, trusting the big guy with all the gold records on the wall. And that's it. That's all she wrote.
I love just that he's fake American back now.
Yeah, you could give me the money back. It's going to be great.
The LA hat, it's all she wrote. And in the beginning, when he asked the question and he answered it, he didn't really have a French accent. So I'm like, I wonder if he's not faking his accent, but he kind of goes in and out. I find it interesting.
I wonder, where's he been living? Has he been living?
He's an international man.
Yeah, he's international. Don't ask too many questions, Justin. So Rob would later say that at the time he thought it was a sort of development deal. He thought they would lip sync for this already produced album and then sing on future recordings. So they immediately went on tour throughout the late summer and fall of 1988. The song originally flopped in the UK, so knowing the cool English influencers loved to vacation in Ibiza, they sent Rob and Fab to promote the song in Ibiza clubs. It worked. The song eventually reached number 2 in the UK, and by August, it was number 1 in Germany. In November, the album was released in Europe, which allowed it to reach the ears of the American record producers looking to make money off of an international hit, namely Clive Davis of Arista Records. Davis liked that it had an international sensibility and a true crossover potential, since it wasn't purist hip hop like someone like MC Hammer or LL Cool J, which must have sounded like gangster rap at the time. But Arista signed on to release the album in the US and tweaked the title and added a couple of new tracks to help with American audiences, including the Diane Warren penned Blame It on the Rain. Diane Warren, if you've never heard of her, a hugely successful songwriter. She's one Tony away from an EGOT, and she's been nominated for 14 Oscars, 14 Grammys. She's got 9 number one singles, including Rhythm of the Night. Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. If I Could Turn Back Time. Unbreak My Heart.
Unbreak my heart.
Because you loved me.
I'm everything I am because you loved me.
How do I live?
How do I live without you?
And I don't want to miss a thing.
I don't want to miss a thing. Because even when I dream.
I mean, Diane.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's like, she's his Lionel Richie. You could, you know, call her out the bullpen. And she's like, I got this, number one single.
These are all of my favorite karaoke songs, you guys. 100%. She has done it. I want to do a Diane Warren night at karaoke.
Oh, that's a good idea. We should do, yeah, you do Diane Warren. I'll be Rod Temperton.
Okay, great. That's next.
Yeah, I'll be Rod Temperton. I'll do only the Rod Temperton songs.
So I think it's important to note how fast this project was moving. Okay, their first single was written by telemarketers and produced by a gas station attendant who was only 18 years old. And their second single on the same album, by the way, was written by arguably the most successful non-performing songwriter in history. If the label knew about the ruse, and how could they not? They were not going to kill the golden goose, okay? After Rob and Fab were added to the project, there were still more songs to record before the American version of the album was complete. So they hit the studio hard. Or at least they stayed very close to the studio hard. And every day, they would travel to the studio to keep up appearances, but spend most of their time hanging out by the pool. My ex used to do that. He used to say he was working and he didn't have a job, so he would leave for the day. He would leave for the day and then come back.
Like he was at work all day?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Trauma.
How did you find out he didn't have a job eventually?
There was no money.
Couldn't pay rent.
There was no money coming in. Incredible.
Was he really fit? Was he like in good shape because he went to the gym or no?
No.
He was just
I don't know what he was doing. He was probably doing drugs. Anyway, after the staff left at night, Brad Howell would be brought in to do the real work of recording the vocals. Clive Davis attempted to send his A&R guy to oversee recordings and make sure the music was headed in a direction that Arista liked. But obviously, Farian couldn't allow that. So he stood his ground and barred the label from witnessing recordings. Oh, my God. They got away with it.
Beige flag, red flag,
huge red flag. Six flags. Nobody could witness these recordings. They have to work in complete silence and no one could be around. They can't have eyes on them. What do you? Come on, my guy.
I like the idea of telling Clive Davis, super producer, who's working with like Whitney Houston and everybody. It's like, no, you can't come in and see this.
Yeah.
You can't come in. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
They got away with it because producers and artists often want to keep creative professional distance from their label. The label is just a bunch of suits and we're artists, baby. Okay. So in January of 1989, the single for Girl, You Know It's True entered the Billboard charts at a ripe 83. The full album, also called Girl, You Know It's True, was released in March, and by the end of March, the single reached number 2 on the chart. Throughout the year, the album would produce number 1 songs from its next 3 singles. So, Girl, You Know It's True hit number 2. Blame It on the Rain, number 1. Girl, I'm Gonna Miss You, number 1. Baby, Don't Forget My Number, number 1. And All or Nothing, which hit number 4.
It's so much money.
Yeah.
This is so
they're
much
swimming
money.
Scrooge McDuck style in money.
Yeah, they're selling singles. Yeah, you gotta remember they're selling you know, 45s and cassettes of just individual records and then the whole record. Oh my God. Money City.
The album was dominant throughout 1989, spending 7 weeks at number 1, tied with the Fine Young Cannibals for longest time at the top of the charts for the year. This happened despite how fucking weird the story is. It's not like there was one revelation and everyone was like, no way. I mean, believing these two sang the songs was an exercise in willful ignorance. As soon as Rob and Fab started doing interviews, it was obvious that there was a big difference between their soulful American accented singing voice and their thick speaking accents punctuated with broken English. Rob had a thick German accent and Fab had a thick French accent. This is exactly what happened to Iggy Azalea.
Yeah. Oh, but it's good.
No money, no family. 16 in the middle of Miami, no money. Yeah, anyway, so this is me.
What are you talking about? God.
She's okay to look at them.
All right, move on.
She is pretty. So we heard from Fab. Okay, we heard from Fab earlier, but just to paint you a picture, here's what Rob sounded like in 1993. Here's an interview after the scandal that we'll get to, answering the question, would you do everything differently?
We were 22, 23, very naive Germans, French people, who never been in the United States, who hardly didn't speak English, who got this offer, you know? And I don't know if I would do it the same way, but probably maybe I would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why does everybody, like, is German just a goofy sounding accent? Because it just sounds so silly.
Yeah, you know, we do it different. We do it different.
You know,
I think it's
show
because
airs in Europe.
I know, but you know what? I think it's because, honestly, truly, it's because of Goldmember. I cannot stop.
Oh, to me, you're just locked in.
To me, it's like, I love gold. It just sounds so silly. And yeah, if you guys want to cancel me for that, that's fine. So even if you subscribe to the theory that anyone could sing without an accent, even if they can't speak without one, this theory crumbles when you consider they were also rapping with no accent. That's so much harder to do. So couple that with the fact that almost immediately after Rob and Fab were hired to be the face of the group, Charles Shaw, the real rapper, began speaking openly in the press about how he was the real rapper. He was just much younger than the singers who had been employed at studio musicians for years. The industry veterans knew how the game was played, and that music wasn't about giving everyone equal credit. It was about telling a great story.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
They're just like, they open the newspaper and the real rapper's in there like, oh man.
Talking shit. Being like, an 18-year-old little shithead. Like, that's me rapping on there. What are you talking about? It's me. But I guess they didn't, like, back then they weren't really doing NDAs and stuff. I guess they weren't smart about covering their tracks, really.
Well, you're trying to also get your career going. You do this thing for $12,000, and you're like, whatever, I rap for $12,000. But then when you see it become a multi-million dollar thing, then you're like, hey, y'all, I can rap for more than $12,000.
Yeah.
Pass me some more cash, please.
Yeah.
But like so many of these stories, all they had to do was give more money to shut him up. In an interview, Shaw said, he paid me for my studio work, but did not pay me to give my voice to two other guys that make millions on it. And as the group continued to blow up, Rob and Fab felt the juxtaposition. As the group continued to blow up, Rob and Fab felt the juxtaposition of the rock star lifestyle and being trapped in a lie with no control. And since they didn't share a brain, their experiences and feelings toward the ruse were different. So Fab felt the pain of the lie much deeper than Rob. Perhaps it had something to do with the fact that Rob had been abandoned by his parents and his first memories of being alone were in an orphanage. Fab had grown up wealthy with two loving parents, and reality to him was much more of a comfort. Rob knew how cruel the world could be, and most of his problems didn't come with international adoration and piles of money. Fab would later call it like being in a, quote, golden prison. Here is a clip of Fab from the Music Express interview talking about performing, quote unquote, live.
It must have been quite scary to go on stage each time, especially with live television. No, because in Europe, everything was playback. You know, for years, a lot of American acts who came to Europe, none of the studios were built for live performances. So it was playback. You know, until in Europe, it was normal for people. And I found out later that a lot of during the 80s, a lot of, because, you know, this generation from back in the days didn't have YouTube. The kids of today speak much better English than the people from yesterday. The world has changed. So back then, they used to have European
people and then have Americans record. A lot of European producers did that. I didn't know that. I find out that, oh, it was not, it didn't happen to us, but you know, with us it was not willing, but there was some plans where there were teams that were saying, okay, I pay you this amount of money, blah, blah, blah. You know, but we, you know, we became very successful, not knowing that it would ever go like that. We thought, okay, we do one record, we pay the money back, and then we're out. But then success came, and yeah.
I don't know the degree to it. I mean, like, yes, I'm sure some people had lip syncing factories, but there were also, like, I think a good counterpoint to this, because what's also happening at the same time is, like, Black Britain is taking off, where there actually is a bigger Black population, and, like, Soul to Soul and Loose Ends are singing and performing all of their music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, there's no reason why they couldn't have like lawyered up or got some representation to help them after things popped off. You know what I mean? Like the gold prison thing is really just a lie you're telling yourself at that point.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. When it all goes bad, like, yeah, it's like, did you think it's a gold prison if it wouldn't have went bad?
Yeah.
They were focused on a pivot to singing their own songs. Can you believe it? They still believe that if they were this popular, there would be nothing stopping them from achieving their OG dreams. By July, Robin Fab requested to stop doing interviews after suspicions about their thick accents cropped up in the press.
When Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jean-Claude Van Damme had questions about their accents.
That's when you know you should chill out. One of their biggest promotional tours in 1989 was the MTV Club Tour, hosted by Downtown Julie Brown. The tour featured Milli Vanilli, Paula Abdul, Tone Loc, and Information Society. The label and management jumped at this offer since Milli Vanilli could hide kind of in this group, you know? So without a need to sell all the tickets themselves, the duo could avoid many opportunities for them to say anything at all. Meet and greets, radio station promos, and retail store appearances would give way to simply performing their live show for audiences. So here's the Club MTV live tour commercial. Let's check it out.
The Potipkin Village group.
That'll be great. They won't say anything.
Yeah, they can just look cute.
Entire live club tour.
Club MTV in your town. Club MTV live, the tour, hitting the road with Paula Abdul, Tone Loc, Information Society, Was Not Was, Lisa and Cult Jam, and Milli Vanilli. Performances, plus videos, live interviews, and who knows, you may wind up on stage.
Oh,
tune in
the
club every weekday at 4, 3 Central to see when the action hits your town.
Hi, we are Milli Vanilli. Join us on Club MTV, the tour, this summer.
Oh, their
no.
English is so bad.
Oh, no.
They like can't speak English. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
That's like when Arnold Schwarzenegger got brought over here. But like the first like 3 or 4 movies, you know, like Hercules in New York, where they're like, dude, we have to just.
You're not going to say anything. You just
be, we're just going to redub you.
Wow.
Like, we're going to have an American guy do all
that's
your parts
very,
and you just flex.
Man, were we as a people just dumber? That's very clearly obvious. We were more believing that, you know, people wouldn't do things like this.
And I don't think we knew how to place, like, a lot of these people. Like, we didn't have, like, now we just expect all of our, like, actors to be Europeans now. Mm. But I think this was, like, kind of new.
Well, we're
like even Downtown Julie Brown, I felt was new. That was like the first. I was like, I didn't know they had black people in the UK. It was like, you know, seeing her, you know, it's like.
Loved me some Downtown Julie Brown. It's such a crush on her. Oh, my God.
I've heard of her.
English accent. Oh, stop.
And also Paula Abdul. Remember, she was also.
Paula, of course.
Had the ambiguity. Like, nobody knew what group she was part of. We were getting used to all this stuff back then, you know. Because it was, you know, just like wasn't just like white guys anymore.
Yeah. Ariel doesn't know. She wasn't born yet.
I don't know. I've just heard. It looks like it was a lot of fun, though. It does. So this is a clip from the MTV Club Tour with Julie Brown introducing Milli Vanilli before their performance.
What's wrong with your accents?
Well, you're lucky enough to grab them here and bring them down to Club MTV before, well, before they got too big, really. Well, not in a nasty sense, it's just that they're very busy now.
They're
planning to go out on the road in 1990 to do their own tour and also a little bit of movie work. But we grabbed them when they were really, really hot. Back in June. Please, let's give a round of applause once again, like we did on that very special night when Milli Vanilli stopped by the studio at number 21. Girl, you know it's true, and this is how they did it.
The choreographed dancing is, it's everything.
Yeah. It's also the thing of, like, you know, that Germany, they're good dancers. Like, this is actually terrible choreography, even for the time. Like, right? Like,
yeah, we were dancing.
So bad.
Pants are tight though. The dreads are dreading. They look good.
Yeah, the look is.
The there. Look is. Look, yeah, they look good. They though. Look real good.
But they can't. They can't actually dance either. That's like. What's like.
I have a feeling they're not on beat.
No, they're not. Like, no, that's what I'm saying. They actually can't dance. And especially when you compare them to, like, you know, like MC Hammer is.
Oh, he was out here. Period. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Hammer has 40 people on stage that are better than these guys dancing.
Yikes.
Or like Madonna or anybody's choreography. They're not even particularly good singers. It's like, yeah, it doesn't work. In America, it immediately arouses suspicions, I feel.
I mean, Jennifer Lopez gets away with not singing. But at least she dances and she's pretty, so.
She's an incredible dancer.
Yeah, she's an incredible dancer.
And her voice isn't, like, bad.
No, it's I actively hate Jennifer Lopez. She cannot sing. She cannot sing. That woman is we should have a Fraudsters episode about Jennifer Lopez. Anyway,
really think so, it's that bad?
Oh, it's that all bad, right. And she stole all her music from Ashanti, and it was all Puff Daddy's fault. So even if some people suspected that something was amiss,
she speaks English.
Yeah, she does speak English, so there is that. She doesn't speak Spanish. It's okay. So even if some people suspected something was amiss, that we just lost all the Jennifer Lopez listeners. Also, even if some people suspected something was amiss, that just wasn't as big of an issue as it would be now. And something was most definitely amiss, okay? So one incident in particular threatened to bring down the whole dang operation before it really got off the ground. So on July 21st, 1989, at a Club MTV tour stop in Bristol, Connecticut, their playback device glitched and kept skipping to repeat, "Girl, you know it's, girl, you know it's, girl, you know it's," over and over and over again. The track glitch lives in all of our brains, and I'm sure you can recall this haunting repeat in your minds like it was yesterday. I pretty much just sang it for you, but we have the clip.
It's
going into a Running Man. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's not the Skrillex remix. It is a very bad mistake.
Yeah, and it's messed up because you try to, if you hope it only skips once, you can kind of play it off. But once it does it 8 times, but then you've already, you know. It's just like, hey, if you're a younger listener, if you don't know what the awkward level of this is, remember when Ashley Simpson was on Saturday Night Live and her record skipped?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny how that also ruined her career. And that's like, but people always lip sync on these shows.
Then they stopped after that. And like, I don't think anyone
people did stop.
Playback after that.
Well, because it truly ruined her career.
Yeah.
She still dances in Ireland.
She's doing something. It's not great. We'll save all that discussion for next week, guys, when our two-part deep dive into Milli Vanilli continues. There's so much more. This is one of the better stories we've ever had. And I'll see you next time. I love Milli Vanilli. I love the story. I'm so excited.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Fraudsters. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Check out the show notes for the show's social media links so you can follow us and see the resources we use for this episode. Fraudsters is hosted by me, Sina Gasnavi, Justin Williams, and Ariel Lieti. Producer is Noreen Malik. Editor is Ryan Connor. Our writer is Nick Turner. Our researcher was Patrick Fisher. Music by Grant Gordon. Executive producer is me, Sina Gasnavi. This has been a production of Zero Cool and The Last Podcast Network. We'll be right back.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.